This episode of An Abundance of Not is brought to you by Amazon.com. Amazon affiliated with us. We're very happy about it. Please go to anabundanceofnot.com. Click on the Amazon banner and do all your shopping as normal. Bookmark for ease of use. We appreciate it.
And TLDRGamer.com. When you don't have a whole lot of time to read the gaming news and just want the brief excerpts, visit TLDRGamer.com. for the core info. Thank you to them for the hosting and bandwidth for our podcast. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome into An Abundance of Not. Garrett here on May the 7th. Brad and Wade joining me as always.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
How's everybody doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I've had better.
Yeah, you've had better.
I've had better.
I could complain, but I could always complain, so pretty normal.
You're just a big complainer.
Everyone's got their problems.
Something. Yeah, this is true. Yeah, so I think I mentioned last week that we're starting the process of buying a house. And after being told by our lender that everything looks good, we shouldn't have a problem, go ahead and proceed with negotiations. We do that. And then today we get a word that the funding didn't come through. So I was very, very upset that we were kind of led down a path of inaccuracies and looking stupid in the form of trying to negotiate for a purchase, only to not actually be able to make the purchase. So,
Yeah, that does suck.
It's pretty livid today.
Thank God you got that all that out at work, because I would...
Yeah, I had to remove myself from my work area, take a little bit of a walk, and...
clear thy head.
Yeah, something like that. Try to just come to terms with it, knowing that rage and anger...
one of your lifelines.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you caught that one.
Yeah, I did. Knowing that the rage and anger doesn't really solve anything, but, you know, when you get built up and to certain expectations and then those don't get met, it's a tough pill to swallow.
Yes, it is.
Anger leads to hate.
Hate leads to suffering.
I was trying to go with, like, the dark side, but sure.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's the path to the dark side, as said by Yoda in episode 2, I think. Anyway, that's not important.
I had to. I'm sorry.
I know.
Considering it was May the 4th.
May the 4th and Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
I mean 5th.
There we go.
Revenge of the 5th. Yeah. So what's up with you, Brad?
It sounds like it's going to be an interesting evening.
I thought about cracking open a bottle of wine, but since I just bought it and it's white Zinfandel, it didn't have enough time to get to proper temperature.
Ah.
Yeah. To your benefit, I'm sure.
I'm sure. I don't even know what proper temperature is.
White Zinfandel's a blush and typically refrigerated. So it would have been luke cool at best, and that's just insufficient.
I've had a drink, but nothing.
No, great. Wade sloshed.
To get
totally sober. Totally sober. What's the problem, officer?
The road jumped out and hit me.
That tree suddenly moved.
Watch out for those walking trees.
So things are going well here. I am in upstate New York.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
Is it warmer?
It's not exceptionally warm.
Is it warmer?
60s. It is warmer. It is starting to warm up, but I am fairly near. I'm just east of Buffalo, so the scenery is very pretty.
There's still snow. Well, that's nice.
The family came with me this week, which is always a wonderful thing. They visited Niagara Falls while I was at work and said that there are sections of the falls that still have ice on them and sections of the path that are still covered in snow.
Well, that's not fun.
Not bad for May.
No kidding.
Yeah, so.
What else? Anything? Anything fun or exciting over the weekend?
Weekend was actually, it was busy. We were running errands, getting stuff ready for the trip. Kids had soccer. You know, it was an average weekend.
That's nice.
Yeah, yep.
Well, without further ado, I think we'll get into some movies. So in the movies this week, we have coming out The Neighbors. This is the Seth Rogen and Zac Efron comedy about a fraternity moving next door to a single family, and all hell breaks loose. This, surprising to me, has an 87% critic rating. Pretty high for a comedy that appears to be of, you know, this nature. Coming up next is Legends of Oz, Dorothy Returns. This is an animated movie with the voice of Lea Michele, who many will know from Glee. This is not yet rated on the Rotten Tomatoes. And lastly, Mom's Night Out. This is, I mean, with a title like that, that just sounds like a winner. It's 43% critic rating. Looks like a total chick flick, so I'm sure I will be nowhere near this one.
Three movies I put...
Oh, come on. You want to see it on opening night?
Yeah, I'm going to get a tent and I'm going to camp out.
Yeah. Yep. Three movies on the Do Not Watch list have been added.
Yeah, my daughter might like the Legends of Oz movie, but, you know, it's not a rush out to see.
Yeah. Have mommy go see that one with her.
Yeah, exactly. We're waiting for X-Men and How to Train Your Dragon, the good stuff. In the box office, the surprising to me, not necessarily that it's number one, but by how much it was number one, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 took top lead. It pulled in $91.6 million, which is pretty high to me for a 55% critic rating, but I guess nothing else was really there to compete with it, so good for them. The Other Woman in second at 14.4. Heaven in for... Heaven is for Real in third at 8.6 million. And good old Cap America bringing up the fourth slot with 7.8. So, yeah, that's kind of it for movies this week. I might go out and see Spider-Man. I'm not really sure what the plan is Sunday for Mother's Day. Make sure everyone takes care of their moms, though. But aside from that, that's kind of it for movies, unless you guys have anything you want to interject or share.
Nope, still haven't.
No, not really.
Still haven't seen that one movie that Kirby reminded me, and I've forgotten already.
It's on Facebook. We'll track it down. And to our other listeners, we look forward to hearing from you. So communicate with us. Okay, great. Thanks. Bye.
I tried to get someone from work to join in with us, but she's like, I couldn't contribute to any of these because I don't watch Game of Thrones and I don't have any input on any of the things you guys do. I'm like, well, get out.
How does she know that without listening to a show or something and getting into it? But yeah, if we're done with movies, let's go ahead and get to some news.
It's been kind of a quiet week this week as far as news goes, but one really big one that kind of stood out in my mind, NASA announced that it is planning to capture an asteroid and put it into lunar orbit.
Capture as in, like, stop it from hitting Earth, or...?
Capture as in redirect its path so that it enters a lunar orbit.
Interesting.
Yes.
Just to say that we can, or is there like an actual benefit to this?
Well, supposedly they want to use this to study Mars. I was confused by the whole thing. I mean, it sounds kind of cool, but the thing's not very big.
Is talking about the apparatus or the asteroid they're targeting?
The asteroid.
Okay.
The asteroid they're targeting is 23 feet wide.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, a little larger than most cars, but, I mean, it's larger than almost all cars, but even still, it's not big in a planetary scale.
Yeah.
It's not like the size of Texas or something.
So they're estimating that this is going to cost somewhere on par with the Curiosity Mars rover, which is about $2.5 billion.
Okay.
This is not sure what we're hoping to get from this.
Yeah, and that sounds like a lot of money for something with little payoff. I mean, I kind of thought NASA was going by the wayside because they were pretty much a giant money pit.
And NASA,
yeah.
Given that our economy is in the outstanding states that it's in right now, you'd think we could find better use for, you know, a couple billion dollars.
NASA, they hate spending money, but the economy needs them.
I'm not sure.
Well, there's talk in the release about, Wade, you'll like this one, possibly mining it, or learning to mine it.
I mean, heck, when we mine out everything else on Earth, it's like, well, what else do we do? Well, there's a ton of rocks out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you think if you could direct them towards the moon and then somehow take advantage of mining them there, because they won't burn. There's no atmosphere on the moon for them to burn up. They would just collide and then just be there. But then you still got to get to the moon and deal with that. So I don't know.
Right. Just sent a bunch of droids up. Voila. Droids and drones.
Great.
Droids and drones. They're talking about using the mission to the asteroid to work out some of the logistics as far as a manned mission to Mars, but I don't see what they can get out of landing or going to an asteroid that they didn't get out of going to the moon. And, you know, do we really want to start putting stuff in orbit of the moon or start messing with the moon in any kind of really big way? I mean, this is what controls a major controlling factor of our tides and weather on Earth.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's kind of
let's not mess with that too much here.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, although people don't realize that every rotation around the Earth, the moon gradually gets closer to us. The Earth's gravity is technically pulling the moon in, although it's by a fairly minimal amount. But at some point in the Earth's future, there will be a collision, which is kind of interesting to think about. What's that?
I said, and that will be catastrophic.
Yeah, well, mankind will probably be dead by then anyway, or living in, you know, space colonies or something.
And there goes the Earth.
Yep.
That was nice.
Put up a good run.
Well, jumping from asteroids to the extinction of the dinosaurs, because they have a relationship, right? Sort of?
Possibly. So allegedly.
Kind of. I mean,
I don't know. I wasn't there.
I cannot say. I cannot confirm or deny, as I was not there.
Just how old are you?
Time traveler.
A new
dinosaur was unearthed in China. That's the remains of a slender, long-snouted T-Rex that they have since nicknamed the Pinocchio Rex. We have... It's pretty much categorized as a new class of dinosaur because it was kind of at a later stage. They claim that the dating of the bones pretty much was right up to the date of pretty much mass extinction, from what I understand from this article. Given that it was found in China, it was named after an ancient city in Guangzhou called Guanhao, or Queen Hao, it's Q-I-A-N-Z-H-O-U. But that's kind of interesting. They say the snout of this T-Rex, or T-Rex cousin, is roughly 70% of the skull, which is similar to other fossils they found in Mongolia that they call the Aliormus, or Alioranus. But they say that that species, the fossils they found were juveniles, whereas this skull appears to be an adult of the similar nature. They say because of the longer snout, it's unlikely to have the same bite force as the more muscular T-Rex. It's more likely to cut up its prey as it has a higher number of teeth and they are more blade-like as opposed to, I don't know what you would categorize a T-Rex tooth, but apparently not blade. I'm guessing when they say blade, it's more of like a shark's tooth shape. I don't know.
More of a shredding material?
Whoa. Try that again?
The heck?
Interesting. Wade's having technical difficulties.
Actually, we did. I had to get a mic, and now we're getting a kind of delay.
Brad, is it sounding good to you?
Well, that's fun. No, I can hear Wade twice. Oh, and that's an interesting thing.
Let's see. Just to finalize this up, this dinosaur represents that there is definitely a distinction from Asian dinosaurs to the North American, as there has never been a long-snouted T-Rex cousin found in North America. So that's kind of interesting.
I don't know who gets to name these things, but they need to stop.
What? You don't like the Pinocchio Rex?
Not so much. Okay, well, so technically that name is humorous, but, you know, the official name, I mean, can we pick some pronounceable names?
Well, they're all, I don't know. I mean, the scientific name, if I can pronounce it, is the Kianzhaosaurus sinensis. Appears to be semi-Latin. I don't know.
I don't know, but it's, you know.
It's strange.
Let's start calling them easier names, like dog.
Well, we've got a Canis lupus for that one.
Yeah, the gray wolf. Well, that's dinosaurs for you.
Well, considering off the dinosaur saga, speaking of old things, Blizzard is bringing back their classic games, such as the Lost Viking, the first game they've ever made, for free off their Battle.net. I mean, with cool. their population of Heroes of the Storm, Hearthstone, and the next World of Warcraft expansion, Warlords of Draenor, it's almost like they're getting back to their roots and going, hey, you know, guys, this is what started it all.
But they're giving it away for free.
For free, yes.
Like, completely.
Like, completely just go down to your download games section in your Battle.net account and download them.
Cool.
Now, you, people who do not live in U.S., you're going to have to change your region to download them to a English U.S., which is on the lower left of the game's download page in your Battle.net account. To be able to download those, Blizzard is notorious for doing that, where their promotional gimmicks are for U.S. only, but there is a workaround that. But I just told you.
So, have you guys played any of these games?
I have not.
I have not. I'm actually kind of interested in looking into Lost Viking, which was their first one, or Lost Vikings, because there's three of them.
Well, hey, for free. I mean, you can't beat that price, twice as much.
I'm still just pissed at Blizzard that they no longer support Diablo 2, and since Mac did an upgrade to one of their OS encoders, Diablo 2 no longer plays, and that makes me sad.
I didn't realize that.
Modders, get on it.
Yeah, one of the, I don't know if it was the upgrade to OS 10 or one of the subcategories to OS 10, but it changed some encoder deal within the operating system, and Diablo 2 will no longer play, which totally sucks.
That does suck.
So, I mean, Diablo 3 obviously is fine, but then right. Blizzard came out and said that since Diablo 2 is so old, they're no longer supporting anything for it, and all that crap. So that totally sucks.
Wah.
Hey, Diablo 2 was awesome, man.
I agree.
If any of our
listeners know of a workaround, post it on our Facebook page.
Yes, I need it. I will love you long time.
Please keep details to yourself.
I intend yes. to.
Speaking of loving a long time, do you like that for a segue?
That's almost like it was planned, like between the almost. Two of us.
Like we'd, you know, rehearsed this or something.
Once again, please keep the details to yourselves.
So, a company that is trying to love its customers a long time, Target is back in the news. This time with a mixed bag of news. Bad news for the executives, but hopefully good news for its customers. They have a new chief information officer, and their CEO stepped down this week.
Interesting.
But, yeah, I guess, you know, after it all, it was just a little too much for them to stay on with their data breach and all. But one of the good things coming out of it is we've spoken before about the new credit card standard known as chip and PIN and how much more secure that is and that it's a better and we should have done this a long time ago and there was no market driving force. Well, given their history, Target has decided to be the ones to kick this off, and they are going to be moving their own in-house debit and credit cards to chip and PIN. They're aiming to be the first retailer to completely switch over their internal systems to be completely chip and PIN. So they're trying to, you know, get a little bit of credibility back here.
So give us a quick breakdown between current credit card technology and chip and PIN credit card technology.
As a disclaimer, I am winging it a little bit here. I haven't looked very deeply into the technology, so I'm going on what I understand to be true. And if I make any mistakes, I will correct them. But current technology is a magnetic stripe on the back of the plastic. That magnetic stripe contains all the account information. It's actually very easy to buy equipment inexpensively that you can swipe that and decode exactly what's on it. There's next to no protection at all. The protection for the consumer doesn't come from the technology. It comes from the fact that the credit card company guarantees you no liability. So if your credit card details are stolen, it's not your problem.
Yeah, well, they will absolve you from those expenses.
Yes, it is your problem in that you have to deal with the aftermath or the fallout of it, but you're not on the hook for any of the false charges. So with chip and PIN, the credit card now has a microchip in it. I don't know if either of you have seen smart cards. They look kind of like SIM cards, the old full-size SIM cards that were about the size of a credit card.
Okay.
They look similar to that. They've got that golden chip on one end. And that chip is not a memory chip. It's actually a microprocessor. It's a tiny little CPU. It doesn't have a whole lot of computational power. But it does have enough. It draws its power from the reader. So you complete your checkout at Target, and you insert your credit card into the credit card reader, and the reader powers the little processor on the chip and PIN card. You enter your PIN into the reader to unlock the chip, and it generates a one-time authorization for the amount that, you know, the system has recorded.
Okay.
So, if your credit card details are intercepted, they intercept essentially a record of that one transaction that is no longer usable to do anything with later.
Gotcha.
So it's like Brad bought nachos at the snack bar at Target.
Yeah, exactly. And date and time stamp. So unless you can be Brad buying nachos at exactly this time and date in the past, it does you no good.
Interesting.
Huh.
So, it doesn't completely eliminate fraud, but It does reduce it a lot. It would have been extremely helpful to have all the details encrypted that, you know, got hacked. Europe has been using this. It's actually not a new technology. We've just been extremely slow at adopting it. Europe has been using this for, I want to say, a little over a decade.
Oh, wow.
And when they implemented it, they saw a very, very significant drop in fraudulent cases.
That's really interesting.
Yes.
I know I was talking to you about the coin, that programmable card.
Yes.
A couple weeks ago. I was doing some research on it, and I looked them up. They're like $50 each.
Yep.
It was like, ouch. Like, for what? Like, there's no tech support to it, from my understanding. There's no actual, the only service to my, and again, I'm speculating how it works, but I would imagine that if you select your Visa card that's through Bank of America, through the coin card, when you do a transaction, say through Target, Target pings Coin. Coin has to look at their records to see what card was activated at that time, ping that company for the funds. So you've got a middleman in there only to, and a benefit to you, the buyer, is less, you know, cards
less
in your wallet.
Less plastic in your wallet.
Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of cool because if you, it does have its own little Bluetooth signal. So if you do walk too far away from it and you have the Bluetooth and the app enabled on your phone, it will notify you that you are a certain distance away from your coin to help prevent you from doing something stupid. But yeah, when I saw it was like $50 each plus like a $10 shipping charge or something, I was not interested.
And they're disposable, as I understand. There's a little battery inside that keeps the thing running, and it's good for, I don't know the exact details, I believe it was about the average life of a credit card, so we're talking, what, 4 years or so?
Yeah. And I mean, and then, I guess if you were to break $50 over 4 years, it's insignificant, but at the same time, it still sounds like a fair amount of change for minimal convenience.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
People will do things just that they said they could, or they can, or they did.
I guess.
It was crowdfunded, so obviously enough people were interested for them to start making them.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know it was crowdfunded.
Yeah, I believe it was a Kickstarter.
Gotcha. Well, from e-purchases and transactions, we jump to internet entertainment. We're looking at our good friends Netflix. And a poll has come out that rated or asked the question of pretty much what price or what price increase would subscribers be willing to bear versus jumping ship. And oddly enough, it appears $2 is the breaking point. The subscribers say that if the prices were to go up by $2 or more, they are very likely to end their subscription and take their business elsewhere, whereas they are more willing to put up a small $1 increase. It looks like we talked about this a couple weeks ago where Netflix was going to attempt a new pricing model in select areas, and that kind of caused an uproar in the community, forcing CEO to quickly come out and say, okay, no, that's not the case. It looks like that new subscribers may be held to a higher price, whereas existing subscribers may have a little bit of a grandfathered period before a delayed price increase. And it looks like that increase may be between $1 and $2, but they haven't specified. They say the generous time period, they're putting in quotes, for maintaining current subscription costs to current subscribers may be up to 2 years. So, I mean, that's kind of nice. But it's interesting how we make the distinction. $1, okay, we could deal with $1, but you know, we can deal with $8.99, but when the price is now $10 a month,
it's that double digit breaker.
That might be that's a little tough to swallow. I don't know if I could do that.
You know, I find the rationale here really interesting, that we are, as a mass market, we are price sensitive and hesitant to raise the price for Netflix to $10 because, you know, I'm not really sure. You know, meanwhile, they've got this huge library of content that certainly keeps my family very entertained.
Yeah, it's at your fingertips at almost any time. They've got
the
apps to download and stream to the computer easy.
Sure. On the go, at home. Meanwhile, we think nothing of dropping $150 for a cable subscription that gives us 300 channels of crap, of which we watch two channels, and there's only one show that we kind of like, but we have to watch it exactly when it's on. We can't pick unless we pay $10 more a month to get the DVR. You know, come on.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't want, from a consumer standpoint, I don't want Netflix to be exorbitantly expensive, but even at $10, I think it's it's still the same price that it has been for years, even though they've expanded their library content by a significant margin. There has to be a value proposition there. As a consumer, I don't want it to go up, but I certainly think we're getting value for $10 a month.
I don't disagree at all. I mean, and I've said this before, the only reason we have a cable box is because we got a really good offer that included HBO and Stars when we moved on top of our internet bill. And so we pay, I think, $60 for our cable, but we are looking to maybe up it because there is a few shows coming out that we don't have access to that channel. We don't necessarily want to spend $50 to buy the show on, say, iTunes and deal with the delayed release that they do. But it will probably come down to the overall cost. I mean, we have bought shows, entire series, not series, but season on iTunes. And, you know, it's there when we want it, but you don't get the same, you pay more for the show and you don't get the same luxuries that other people do. You get a delayed release. You've got to deal with downloading it and stuff like that, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but there could be a whole discussion on that for sure.
Of course, we're continuing on. With the $10 price, I mean, is there anything that's being added to it? Because I know from spending some time when the Super Bowl was going on, we were down to family friends, and they had, I think it was Hulu.
Yeah, but Hulu's more TV shows. Not that Netflix doesn't have TV, but Hulu is more focused on TV.
And they also
is more current, whereas Netflix is more library.
Yeah.
They do also have the watch later feature. So if you kind of, you know, see something like, oh, you know, I kind of want to look at that, and you can hit that watch it later feature, and you can go back when you have more time.
Well, no? there's a watch queue on Netflix, isn't there? I mean, that you can fairly easily set up kind of delayed playlists. I'd have to play with it, yep, though.
Yes.
So yeah, it is there.
I just didn't know that.
So, the problem with Hulu, the problem with Netflix, the problem with iTunes, what you touched on, this delay release feature, we really are at an interesting time, and I know this is very much first world problems. I mean, we're complaining about not getting to watch our TV show for 24 hours.
Yes, very, very true.
Having acknowledged that fact, the problem we're facing is the collision of new technology with old mentality. The cable networks have been doing business this way for, 60 years? Broadcast television has been doing it this way for 70 years, whatever the exact dates are. I'm not, you know, I'm not researching this exactly. They're very well entrenched. You know, we also have the same problem with the movie studios. We've talked about this previously where, you know, why are we waiting for 6 months between theatrical release and DVD release? There is no technological limit here, but they've been doing it this way for 80 or 90 years. We're facing this huge collision where the technology is finally here to do things completely differently, but these monstrous industries have been doing it this way for so long that I think we're really, at the risk of being a little too mean here, I think we're waiting for these executives to die. I think it's going to take a complete change of leadership, new guys at the top that understand the new technology, not business as usual. You know, the old executives, as long as they're still in power, want to do it the old way.
I agree and I disagree. We have, like you said, we have the technology that if a cinematic company releases a movie, let's say, for example, the new Hunger Games, we have the technology that when they release it in theaters, it could be released for digital download. I mean, the infrastructure's there, the means are there. It's just a matter of them making it available.
Yes.
But when you start doing that, now you start, people will no longer go to the movie theater because why would I get in the car and go somewhere when I can spend, you know, I'm going to spend $20 to take, or 20 or even now really $40 to take a family of four just to walk in the door to movie theater. I could buy this digital download for 20 and watch it in my living room the same day. I mean, you're going to start getting that. Well, then now you affect the whole economy from the movie theaters and whatnot there, the distribution method, that kind of stuff. And I rather enjoy going to movie theaters, and I do enjoy going to some of the higher end theaters when the movie warrants it. And I think making a global shift to utilize the technology that we have has its drawbacks. Now, I do feel that when a movie has run its course in the theaters, let's say Captain America, for instance, or maybe they have a criteria that if a movie drops below the top 10 in the box office, they remove it from the theaters and they make it available on download, then I could understand, because you're not getting the revenue from the theaters anymore. You might as well take advantage and get the revenue from the consumer. So that part I agree with. But if you make the content available too early, you definitely hurt other economic or economy factors. But if we do go to an all-digital world, then now you've got the production, CD production companies going away. But, you know, a lot of people don't have home computers anymore either, which is strange to say. A lot of people do rely on their mobile devices for the source of their, you know, technology and fulfillment from that aspect.
But, you know, that was the argument that the movie industry used in the Betamax and VHS lawsuits.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. It's the exact same argument that these movies were filmed to be displayed in a theater, and these upcoming, you know, these young whippersnapper upstarts called Betamax and VHS should be deemed illegal because they're going to violate this entire industry, and the movie industry is going to go bankrupt because once people have home movies, nobody's going to go to theaters anymore. And it was all a line of BS because, you know, now we can look back with that being history, and the advent of theatrical movies on home cassettes exploded and ended up generating more money for the movie studios than theater releases did.
But none of those, and even nowadays, DVD, Blu-ray, they don't release the same date that a movie drops in the theater.
That's correct.
You've got to have the delay and the separation so that you can keep the theater industry alive. Otherwise, if you have same-day releases, my personal opinion is you will destroy the theater experience and business.
No, it's funny that the same issue that you were talking about, Brad, was also applicable with the Walkman. And then also yes. With the
digital download of
music, yeah.
Of music, yep.
I mean, you want to look back at the original Napster before it's what it is now. I mean, that was They got all up in arms about that before it was taken down and restructured to what it is today.
So there has been precedent set to where, you know, this has always been the cry of the existing industry that, oh my goodness, this is going to destroy us. And every time we've faced this, you know, VHS Betamax versus the movie industries, like you said, Wade, with Sony with the Walkman versus recording industry, they've always complained and it's always worked out better for them.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the home video release needs to necessarily be exactly the same time. It doesn't have to be the same day, but, you know, why are we waiting months and months after it's already out of the theater? I'm prepared to compromise with you. Have a theatrical run, and the day it leaves theater, release it on, you know, iTunes.
Yeah, exactly.
Why are waiting?
Then you've
got
to factor
from the theater, and now you've got 3 months to wait before you can buy it.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to definitely come to some sort of global standard, per se, because some movies last a lot longer in theaters, obviously, than others. But I do agree, and that's why I say I agree and I disagree. You've got to have the delay for the release, and if the release is, we move towards a digital release system, that's all fine and good. But they just can't coincide directly with the theatrical release. You do have to have that delay. Otherwise, you will kill the theater economy, in my humble opinion. If there is a delay, then you maximize profitability because people just saw it or said, you know what, I don't want to spend $40 to take my whole family here. But if it's out in 2 months for $20, great, I will buy that. So I think we're on the same page.
I'm building a little bit of a case here, but in the meantime, I think that the actual theater may take a little bit of a hit. I won't deny that. But you're going to have people that prefer the experience of going to a theater. The bigger screen, the better sound.
Yep.
You know, you're going to have people. We talk as though broadband is pervasive. And I think that's where we need to go. Internet definitely needs to be a utility that is available easily to everyone. But the fact of the matter is there are still sections, even of the United States, where high-speed internet is not available. You're not going to be downloading a movie. You're going to go to the theater. So even if they did go to digital release on the same day or a couple days after theatrical release, I don't think it will completely kill the theater industry.
It may not kill it, but it may hurt it. I mean, I know where we're at is we have a pretty wide variety of theaters that we could go to watch a movie. And maybe it becomes that instead of three or four different theaters to go see, yet they consolidate into one. I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing, but now you have four different franchise owners, or currently you have four, whereas if the industry takes a little bit of a hit, you go down to one. Well, that's four franchise owners. That's, you know, four different groups of employees. That's all that kind of stuff that will definitely have some negative effects. But I think we're close, and I think it's a path, and I think you're kind of right in that we need to get the old thinking out of the way, and these people aren't going to willingly step down. They've got to get to a point where they can no longer do the job at hand.
Agreed. So, I don't know if we covered the Veronica Mars movie.
I don't believe that we did.
It was released, let me find it here, March 14th.
Okay.
It was a kind of like a movie wrap-up of the Veronica Mars TV series, which I was not familiar with, I am not a fan of, I have not seen. But the fans got together and crowdfunded it. So they estimated that they could probably do something semi-decent with a $2 million crowdfunded budget. They could wrap this up. They crowdfunded and ended up raising $5.7 million.
Okay.
Now, for everybody who pledged $35 and above, they received a digital version of the movie within a few days of the theatrical debut.
Okay.
Once the movie was released to theater, now remember, these people got digital copies of it within days.
Yes.
It did $3.4 million in the box office. Not stellar, admittedly, but then it was specifically appealing to a specific demographic.
Sure.
There were way too many specifics in that sentence.
Specifically specific.
Specifically, yes. But my point is that it was not a complete failure. These people got almost immediate copies, and it still went on to do fairly well in the theater as well.
How much did you say they got crowdfunded overall for something?
$5.7 million.
So, and they made $4 million in the box office. So they were
3.4.
So they're down $1 million, depending on what they did on a retail level.
Sure.
So, you know, it's bad business if you look at it that way. I mean, you're $1 million in the hole. That's not great. Could they have done higher if they didn't give these people digital copies? Probably, but would they have got the crowdsource to even make the movie if they didn't give something out? Probably not.
Probably not.
So, you know, flip a coin.
Yeah.
But like you said, that was a very focused demographic for something like that. So.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'm all out of content here, aside from... No, that's pretty much it.
I think I have one more here. As we move, look into future plans, I know this is kind of an odd segue, but the Call of Duty franchise has had their next game announced. This will be handled by Sledgehammer, and this will actually be their first shot at the Call of Duty line, I guess is the best word.
I was going to say, I didn't recognize that name.
Yeah, they now have three different studios working on it by each year. So you have Treyarch, Infinity Ward, and Sledgehammer.
Has Sledgehammer done
Let's
any
just
other...
just make this more confusing.
Yeah.
Has Sledgehammer produced any other games that might be recognizable?
I'm not sure. We'd have to look that up.
I wonder if they're like an offshoot of one of these other ones, Infinity Ward, etc. And they just founded their own studio. Anyway.
But continuing on, the next game is it will be Call of Duty, obviously, but Advanced Warfighter. So we went from the first iterations, which was the World War II, to the Modern Warfare. And we kind of had the futuristic with the Ghost. And now we have the Advanced Warfighter. And this is kind of an odd thing. I mean, we have Kevin Spacey giving his appearance and voice in this particular installment.
So you got to remember that a lot of these games and Call of Duty is not exclusive in this and definitely falls into the demographic, but a lot of these bigger games and bigger studios are getting celebrity voiceovers.
I remember Double Fine Games, who was owned by Tim Schafer, got Elijah Wood to do one of their voices.
Yep, and I mean, you look at Ellen Page for the
Beyond Two Souls.
Beyond Two Souls, and she's, you know, not a nobody. So, you know, I mean, there's plenty of big name actors that do voiceovers in games. So,
but I mean, the next installment looks to be pretty fun with laser tanks and magnetic gloves that allow you to climb up buildings and exosuits. And from what I saw, mechs.
It does look like, according to Sledgehammer Games website, that this will be their debut game into the industry.
But there is an interesting footnote to that.
Yep. I figured there was.
They worked with Infinity Ward on Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3.
Okay, so they do have some training in Call of Duty.
And they are associated with Activision.
It's actually all our good friends at Activision.
By now, who isn't associated with Activision?
I mean, their copyright on their website is Activision Publishing Incorporated.
I mean,
so take that into consideration too. But anyway, so it sounds like it's going to be Call of Duty meets Titanfall.
Very much so. I mean, that's what some people are saying. It's COD mixed with Titanfall.
So fantastic.
I'm wondering if there will be a decent PC port. I mean, if there is, I may have to get it. Even though I haven't played any real version of COD for a month or more than a month.
You've got to play it.
Yeah, we just don't
According to the wiki page, so take it with a grain of salt, it will be coming to current consoles, next-gen consoles, and Windows.
Fantastic.
Well, then I think that calls it for me.
Yeah, let's see. This weekend, my daughter's she qualified for a special Girl Scout camp thing by selling so many bloody boxes of Girl Scout cookies. So I will be in attendance with that. We will be bringing the GoPro, though, to have some fun there.
Her selling or you selling?
Her name was on it, so we're going to say her selling.
Okay.
So, yeah, I get to spend my day Saturday up there doing that. But I'll play with the GoPro and see if we can get something fun. She had her first communion this past Saturday. I did record that. I got to check and see how that came out, though, because I was at the back of the church. Kind of conducted an interesting little social experiment, though, when I was there. Afterwards, because the church was packed with all the families and supportive members and whatnot for all the kids for their first communion. So we were out front of the church waiting for her and all the other people to kind of come out. So I decided this should be interesting. I'm going to stand in one spot. I'm just going to hold my ground. I'm not going to move. And we're going to see how people react to, or just kind of their habits. So if people came really close to me, not a single person said, excuse me. If anybody brushed up against me or bumped into me, not a single person said sorry. And these are supposed to be good, God-loving, God-fearing, church-going folk who, you know, clearly preach what they want to preach when there's eyes on them. But then out in the public, it's back to their old selfish ways.
Be kind to your neighbors, only in church.
Yeah. It's pretty much the conclusion I came to. I thought it was really interesting.
And it is very unfortunate.
Hey, Bill, I hate that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. That's the two-faced factor of religion and whatnot. If that offends you...
Unfortunately, you find them everywhere.
Yeah. If that offends any of you listeners, send me your hate mail. I really don't care.
Or post it.
I guess that's one way of getting activity on the page.
That's right.
Or post it up on the comments on YouTube, because no matter what you put, the more comments on the video actually boost up, whether it's negative or positive.
Quantity of comments is better than quality of comments.
Yep. Which makes no sense.
Well, you have the like and the dislike button, so people can write a negative comment and hit dislike. It still shows activity.
All right.
Just not great.
I think that's a good place to leave it.
All right. Well, catch us next time. We're out of here.
That's a wrap.
We here at Abundance of Not do appreciate you listening in and would also appreciate you sharing us with your friends via the Stitcher Radio app and also iTunes. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and join us at Facebook. Thank you.